Welcome to The Spark, everyone. Today we're doing our very first interview with our very own Christina Daniel, Chief Operating Officer and Fellow Strengths Enthusiast. I have been so looking forward to doing this interview with Christina. I know Christina has lots to share with us, and I'm super excited about learning more about strengths work from a different perspective. With that being said, I want to give her the floor, and we are going to talk about leadership, strengths, and everything in between. So this is going to be a good one. All right. So we're just going to jump right in and have Christina just tell us a little bit about her and her background.
So as you know, I'm Christina Daniel. I have been working, as a leader since around 2002, when I moved to Colorado, I was able to come into positions that helped support others and really helped others grow. And as I developed throughout my career, one of the things that I really noticed was how teams work together and how differences often get in all of our way. And then there are things we really like and things we're really good at and other things we don't. And when our things we like do not work well with things other people like on our teams, there are challenges. And during my time at the Behavioral Health Group, I had a really strong supervisor and mentor and wanted to have a retreat with my team because we were struggling. We were having some team challenges, some different needs of others, and communication issues. Just across the board, it was a team that needed to come together. And so I had asked her what she thought. I really valued her opinion. And she asked me if I had ever done the Strengths Finder. Now they call it the Clifton Strengths. And I said, no, I have not heard of that. Well, I took this assessment and it was like a little light bulb went off for me. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the best report I've ever read. This is totally, it gets me. How does it get me? How does it know me so well? I do think folks, most of our team knows that I have a master's in counseling and I have taken the Myers-Briggs. I've taken the DISC. I've taken the True Colors, all of these assessments. And, you know, they made sense, right? Like everything fit. But when I read the Strengths Finder, I was like, holy moly, everyone I know needs to do this. And so that is how I got started in strengths work and how I started my very first retreat with my prevention team at Behavioral Health.
Well, Christina, hearing you talk a little bit about your background with strengths, I remember feeling the exact same way after I had taken mine. I had taken also the DISC assessment, the Myers-Briggs, and I really feel like what Clifton Strengths does well is give you a language. And it's a very universal conversation, and I think it's very easy for people to see patterns with it. So I'm really, really excited that you share that. You see that as a fellow strengths enthusiast. Yes. So as we both talk about this, why don't you tell everyone your top five and maybe your initial reactions when you saw your strengths for that first time?
For sure. And I love that you're saying strengths enthusiast because I always say Gallup nerd. And so I actually really like strengths enthusiast better. So I'm going to steal that, Sylvia. Thank you. So my top five are: my number one is input. My number two is learner. My number three is restorative. My number four is responsibility. And my number five is relator. And as you know, I've taken now a couple of times. And so intellection is still in my top 10. Intellection used to be in my top five. And one of the things that my strength assessment said the first time was, you like to use big words and you, this is how I read it. This is not exactly what it said. And you like to use big words so people trust you. it makes you sound knowledgeable. And it sounded very, in my mind, very maybe manipulative a little bit. Yeah. And a little, and so I struggled with that. And so when I read that, it did it fit? Do I use big words? Absolutely. Do mm-hmm. I collect information? Absolutely. Did I ever think of it as a tool for controlling people? No, mm-hmm. I did not. So it was like, oh, it felt really heavy to me. Mm-hmm. It also didn't feel necessarily wrong, which was then this kind of weird thing I was holding. And then I talked to my team about it. So like this whole purpose of me going through this process was to help my team be stronger. And they said, you know what, Chris, you do use big words. And they said, and when we ask you for things, you'll explain it to us. And you do ask a lot of questions, but that helps us trust you. And so they really helped me see this, what I perceived as a negative, even though this was in our strengths report, right? Like what I perceived as something kind of scary or off-putting, as something they really appreciated and supported me in. And that just made it so much easier to say, yep, I do do those things and they do come easy to me and I can ask a whole lot of questions. And so now how I explain it to people is, so my number one strength is input. That means I'm going to ask you a lot of questions. That doesn't mean I don't think you're doing a good job. It doesn't mean I don't think you know what you're doing. It doesn't mean anything about what I'm perceiving about you. It's actually what I need so I can support you better and differently. And that conversation I had with my team about how that happens made this so much easier for me.
You know what I think is super interesting is, and maybe this was a me experience, maybe Christina, you had that same feeling, but you get your report and you immediately like look at what's in the bottom or what you don't have. Yes. And I feel like in my top five, so I don't know that I've shared that in the podcast yet, but it is achiever, learner, intellection, analytical, and strategic. So very green. And I remember seeing it and I'm like, I don't have blue. Does that mean I can't build relationships with people? And I remember like feeling a little bit, I don't know if it was disappointment, but like concern, like, does this mean I can't do other things? Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to know if that kind of crossed your mind at all when you were looking at yours.
Absolutely, as I am a green and purpler, and there's no orange anywhere close to the top for me. And as a counselor, when I look, and empathy is like late 20s. And so, yeah, I do. I think that's also a very real experience, right? I don't think that that is single to us, Sylvia, like we're, oh my gosh, where are our blues? Where are our oranges? What that means though, is that the other folks in our lives and the other people who love us don't expect us to have that skill, yeah. And they help us develop it. It doesn't mean we can't have friends. It doesn't mean that we're not nice to people. It just means that when we do things, we lead with these other strengths first, not mm-hmm. that we don't have them. And growing into that after reading and seeing the no or very few blue and orange in my top ones, knowing I'm a caring person, and I know you well enough to know you are also a caring person. It's not like we don't like people. Mm-hmm. It is just that when we connect with people, we connect in these other ways first, and then they come into our hearts in a different way, right?
Absolutely. I love that. And I think you touched on a really cool thing, kind of bringing in how strengths work isn't just work in relationships. Like it is very much so personal, right? Mm-hmm. It's an insight to who you are and how you think. I just wanted to ask, how do you see your strengths and knowing your strengths, having that balance with like your personal and your professional life?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that has helped me do is recognize, I do think as a person who really leads with input and learner, I can overcommit. And I can be like, I want to be a part of these things. I want to know all of these. Restorative and responsibility too. I mean, I take, like, I see when things are broken. Responsibility means I want to fix them and I will own that. And it can really mean that I take on too many things. And one of the pieces I've really worked on personally and had assistance from my husband on was saying that it's okay to say no, or it's okay to have input or restorative things around my own well-being, learning about different mm-hmm. maybe diets or exercise routines or things that we want to do to grow personally rather than just professionally, which is where I think in my 20s and even into my 30s, I was very much wrapped around my identity as a person is related to my work, which is then related to all of these executing things that I can do. And now that just doesn't fulfill me as much anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Or it's not the only thing that fulfills me. I love my job. I love working. But I also have decided, and I made a really real commitment. I was on city council, which talk about needing to knock on doors and not having any orange or blue. Mm-hmm. That was challenging. when I left city council, I decided I wasn't going to join a new committee for at least a year. That has been the best thing. But do you know what I had to do in order to make that okay with myself? I did actually promise my husband, but I had to tell people I promised my husband. I was like, I promised Kevin I would not do this. And so I can't join your group. Thanks for asking. But I promised I couldn't just say no on my own. I had to be like, no, I made this commitment to my husband. But it was a very important piece, I think, of that balance. And when I look at my strengths, I had to make up for the fact that all of those things, getting information, solving problems, makes me feel good, right? Mm-hmm. And I can do those things for myself, and that's also okay not to just do those for other people.
Right. Well, you're speaking to the achiever side of me. That is my number one, right? And let me tell you, I think society loves the purple executing strengths because they just get things done. Yes. And it is so hard. And then that really ties into probably for some of the people that lean with blue, but it's hard to tell people no sometimes. So by no means, I think when we start conversations and start looking at strengths, there is the fun stuff, right? The exciting things about learning about yourself, learning about the people close to you that you work with or in your personal life. But there's also like the, oh, now how do I take care of and nourish those strengths? Mm-hmm. And how do I build partnerships when I maybe am not as strong in a certain area? Mm-hmm. So I think that there's two parts of it. Like there's the exciting, fun initial, but then there's all of the, okay, what do I do now?
The work.
Yeah, right. And I do think, so we talked very briefly, I think when you were talking about your background, how maybe you use some strengths. And I do want to kind of pinpoint an interesting fact that I found looking at yours and my strengths and kind of where those lie. And so I found it super interesting. I know you mentioned that you're maybe not as high in orange. I'm not either. But somehow we have both found ourselves in the spotlight in some way, shape, or form. So I think it's meaningful to really talk about how do you maximize the strengths you have to look like other strengths or stretch strengths?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good question. This is where I do think that the Myers-Briggs was also helpful for me. So I am an I on that scale, so an introvert, and I am fairly far over on I, it's not in the middle. And so one of the things I felt like I learned early on in my life and my development and watching my parents and things like that was this is what achievement or success looks like. And that was the people who were confident speaking, the people who were comfortable in front of others, the people who were, you know, friendly. And I think that shaped what I thought I needed to look like in order to be successful. And also meant that I did not know why I was so freaking tired after doing social interactions and wanting to just go home in the dark and not talk to anyone for 2 days, right? Like, this takes so much out of me. Also think that I have been able to use my other strengths to help me get there. So most of the time when I'm in front of other people or when I am doing something like that, I am being restorative or I am feeling a sense of responsibility or obligation. Mm-hmm. I am a learning, I'm achieving something, right? Like what that means to me, or I'm helping someone develop. I do a lot of facilitation and that brings me energy during the day when I'm facilitating a retreat or facilitating a conversation. When I go home, I'm still exhausted and I still need to take care of that. But I think it is how it's not just going out and enjoying being in front of others, because I don't think I actually enjoy that part. I enjoy the outcome of what I get from being in front of others and how we solve those other things.
No, that makes perfect sense. When I thought about and had been in the spotlight, there was a lot of preparing that went into that, right? So I feel like I was using the analytical, okay, what is the most important message to present to this group of people? What is the best way of doing that? I used tapped into that strategic and then just learning about the audience I was presenting to. So I think it's really important to know how your strengths work individually, how they show up for you, and how they work together. But I think that there is more to say that their whole top five strengths look different based on your experience and your values. And like Christina and I, we both have learner in our top five, and I can guarantee you that learner looks different.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that's been the most exciting piece when I'm working with teams, they're like, oh, well, I have the same as so-and-so. I was like, did you read your report? I have done, you know, retreats with people. And they're like, oh, no, I just assumed it was like, it's like, mm-hmm. now take the 20 minutes it's going to take you to read it. And then like big eyes, right? Things, they're like, oh, it's not just that. And when I get them into the small groups where they can talk to others who share their same strength, they're like, oh, yours is different. Why is yours different? That kind of aha moment in those teams who can be like, yes, we both have learner, and how that shows up for Sylvia is very different than how it shows up for Christina, but we both enjoy it, right? We're both, you know, that's the strength of ours, and our teams, we can support them in a different way as being maybe the learners on the team or one of several learners on the team. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, just looking at the strengths report too, I think that there is some value in talking about how you use your strengths to maybe give feedback and receive feedback. Mm-hmm. So I think that, Christina, you're a perfect person to ask these kinds of questions just because you've had an opportunity to lead. And so just wanted to get your insights on that.
I think, so no matter what, giving feedback is hard, right? And getting feedback can be challenging. I think the piece that, in addition to being willing to hear it, is also recognizing both the lens in which it's given from that person's strengths. So as we get to know our teams better and we know what strengths maybe our supervisor has or our team members have, in addition to the strengths we have when we're giving it, I don't think Jana would be sad about me sharing this. I know this is going out to Valleywide, but so her number one, I believe, is achiever. Mm-hmm. And she really likes to have things checked off the list. And so when we meet, we talk about the things that need to be checked off the list first. And then we talk about how we're both doing, right? Like, and that is okay.
That sounds just like Regina's in my one-on-one. I come with my, this is the list of things I want to cover with you. Oh my gosh.
Yes. So we have our little achiever moments, right? Like, yeah, we have these things we need to check off the box. And then for me, like when I'm doing my one-on-ones or I'm having conversations, I have to remember that it just can't start with that. And oftentimes I will, or only be that, right? Oftentimes I will find myself like, okay, what do we need to talk about? And we'd start this thing and I'm like, wait, hold on. How are you doing? Right. Yeah. And resetting that and reminding both me and my team member, right? Like that we need to do this for the, because it's important, right? That connection is important because when you have feedback to give, it's not just about work, right? No matter what we do, anytime we do it, whether it's a work product, whether it's a personal project, whatever it is, we've put ourselves into it and it's important to us in some way, shape or form. So when someone says, I really wish that would have gone differently, or what happened here, or not so kindly, why did you do that? That can really disrupt how we give feedback and whether or not that person feels safe with us anymore. Right. So I think it's really incumbent on, especially those of us who are purple and green and not so much blue and orange, that we remember we have to like not just dive in with the feedback, right? Yeah. Like we've got to step back and think about, you know, thank you for this work that you've done. It was really important. It was really valuable. I'm wondering how you thought it went, right? Like my first supervisor, one of my first supervisors was like 6'4", huge man, great guy, very like, I don't want to guess weight, but he was large. And I was 5'8", 110 pounds. This is in college. And I gave a presentation and I have to tell you, it was terrible. It was not a great training. I learned so much. Like I will never have another training like that in my life, but it was not good. And I'm eating in the dining hall and he comes in and he sits down, scares me, right? Because why are you coming to talk to me? His name was Jack. And he's like, hey, how did that training go? And I was like, Jack, I don't think I did a really good job on it. He's like, yeah, I heard you really effed it up. He did not say F. And I was like, okay, I think I did. And I think back to that, like that was probably one of the most pivotal conversations of my entire career. And I wasn't even a professional yet, right? Like I was a grad student at Youngstown State, like just doing, you know, housing work while I was figuring out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And I think he would have had to have done something different if I didn't say that I did poorly. Mm-hmm. And he still got to tell me that he thought I did not do a good job.
Yeah.
Right. And I think about that. I don't give feedback that way. But I also think that there's something to be built on a relationship of trust, right? Where you can say, I don't think that went the way you wanted it to go. Tell me what you learned. Or if they really think they did a good job and you happen to not think they did and you're the supervisor and ultimately it comes back to you and that roll up that happens, you have to say, I would really like you to do this differently. What does that need to look like based on their strengths? And how do you present that based on your strengths? And potentially stepping back, my responsibility and restorative strengths, that I see things are broken immediately, I want to fix them immediately. That is not helpful to my team. That is, I have been called a bubble popper. I have been, and rightfully so, like people have ideas. I'm like, that won't work for these 10 reasons, right? Like my analytical, my, and then, so now I say, I try to say, my team will tell you, I don't always say, I could still be a bubble popper. I try to say, I wonder how you think that is going to work. Have you thought about maybe one of the 10 things I'm thinking about, right? Or maybe two. And so those are the things I've learned to control with my strengths, because I may see things differently. That doesn't mean their opinions or their thoughts are invalid. I also now am older than I want to be or than I was, and I've had a whole lot of experience, and I'm like, I've seen that fail 15 times, but if you want to try it, okay. Yeah. Like, I'll let you. And so it is it's that kind of, I think it's a growth in all ways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. And I think it connects to this bigger point that we try to make, that strengths work really is understanding emotional intelligence, right? And how to use that. And I talk about often Daniel Coleman and that work where we argue that emotional intelligence is what drives success, at least in adulthood, right? Mm-hmm. After the academics and really after adolescence. What matters is how you connect with people, and strengths really does give you that language to understand someone. And it's really, really important. And I don't think that we've mentioned this before, but in strengths work in general, they're very particular. Gallup is very particular in how they describe the themes. And so it's very important that you read yours over and read the themes report to get a good understanding, because it's easy to look at a theme like communication and say like, oh, I communicate well, but I didn't see that in my top five. And that's not necessarily maybe how you would define communication or how Gallup defines it. So it's really important to look at that. But I think you highlight perfectly the importance of how this all connects to the bigger emotional intelligence piece of this conversation. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I do have a story. So that team that I said I was using this for the first time with, we had one team member in particular. I will not say her name. She does know that I talk about her. So I think that is okay. We've talked about this before, where the team was getting really frustrated. They're like, this person is so direct and they are so mean and we can't do anything. And like just this really intense conversation. And I was like, I had tried different mediations. I had tried different feedback and I was really lost. Well, this person's number one strength is command. Mm. And we had a great conversation at our strengths retreat where this person's number one strength is command. So do you know what that means? And we talked about it. She read her whole thing. The team then started talking and using the strengths language and say, oh, I see so-and-so's command coming out. All right. And then they would say, yeah, it is. Okay. So what do we need to do? How do we do this? And it became a little bit of a joke, but it also became this place of empathy for knowing that is where she leads from. That is her strength. And when we saw it as a strength instead of something that just kept getting in everyone's way, oh my gosh, the teamwork went up, the trust in that person went up, the number of things I had to mediate as a supervisor went way, way down because they could work it out themselves because they had language. I think what you said earlier about having that shared language is really key. And understanding how, you know, command looked for this person different than the rest of us who were very blue. Yeah. And my team was very blue.
Oh my gosh, that's great. I do think with that, in the sense of that, when you think of maybe that experience or maybe others, it's very easy for someone that maybe doesn't fit into like the mold of the rest of the team to maybe disengage. Or maybe just in general, if someone, like for example, we've talked about Achiever a lot, but some of these strengths that really are focused on getting a lot done, what do you do as a manager to try and catch some of that? So you're not seeing that burnout.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to have those real conversations, right? Because there would have been a time in my life that I would have said that that is feeding my soul, not taking away from it. Right? So give me the tasks you want accomplished, because that is making me not burn out. Because if I have to do things that I'm not good at or that are really not in my like wheelhouse to get done, I'm not going to feel good. And that's going to burn me out. Now, I think it's incumbent on supervisors to at least have those conversations and to say, I see you taking on all of these things. How is it going for you? What is your balance plan? What is how are you recharging? What are you doing that feeds your soul? How is this working or not working for you? Mm-hmm. And I think those conversations are the most valuable, because I don't want to, as a supervisor, assume one of my team members is going to burn out because of the things that they're doing. I also don't want to assume that they're not. I want to be able to have that conversation and say, this is what I'm noticing. I'm a little worried about you, a little worried for you. Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
And recognizing that if there is one person on the team who's maybe doing more or doing different, that we're having the conversation as a whole, if they feel like I am being responsible equitably across our whole team. Mm-hmm. Am I giving more projects of X, Y, and Z to a different person because I see something that, and they're frustrated because I haven't given them the opportunity. And I think those conversations are also really important when we're talking about burnout, because I think I would get more frustrated, or I've been in positions in the past where I've been more frustrated because my team wasn't pulling their weight because my boss did not hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why I left. Not because I was doing too much, not because my work was too hard. It was because it wasn't wasn't a level playing field. Yeah. And I think as supervisors, we have so much to balance. And as leaders, we have so much more to balance, right? Supervising is one thing. Leading through change and leading through challenging times are a whole different one. And we have so much to carry. And sometimes we carry more for our staff because they need us to. And other times they carry it because they can. Right. Yeah. And I think having that conversation and keeping track of our own health and well-being, right? Like, I also facilitate mental health first aid, and you can't help others if you haven't helped yourself. You have to put your oxygen mask on first. So if you're not feeding your soul by, for me, having conversations like this, like, again, Gallup nerd, strengths enthusiast, whatever we want to say, like, this feeds my soul. This gets me excited, and it reminds me why I do the things I do. Mm-hmm. And I need to have conversations like this just as much as I need to have the hard conversations and do the data stuff that I don't always want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But that doing things like this is what makes those easier.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think that it doesn't take a lot. Like, you don't have to have this big plan as a supervisor or a leader going into these conversations. It really is about just connection, mm-hmm. and understanding where people come from and maybe how they see things. It's like about that getting curious, mm-hmm. Mentality. And I mean, this, it's really easy to do a check-in. It's not something that you need to prep for and you need to say, am I saying the right thing? Am I doing the right thing?
Right.
Like, it really is just about connection, mm-hmm. and seeing people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you can kind of get caught in the weeds of, I don't want to say the wrong thing, or is this going to upset their communication style, or whatever strength it is that maybe you run up against. Mm-hmm. So
I agree 100%. I also think it's okay to name what your fear is as a supervisor, to say, gosh, I'm going to say something and I don't know if it's going to land well, or holy cow, I just said that and I saw your face, right? Like, I think that being real in the moment also, and being super genuine, right? So being curious, being genuine, and really trying. I mean, I've made so many mistakes as a leader. So hopefully not the same one multiple times, but I have. I've made a lot of mistakes. And I think the thing that I have learned is that you have to say, I'm sorry. You have to say, I don't think that sat well with you. Let's talk about it. Gosh, it seems like you're really frustrated. Can we, unpack this a little bit? Can we take some time? And I think those things are what builds that relationship. It's not because you do everything right. It's not because things are perfect. It's not because you achieved whatever you've achieved. It's because you've had these as a team, right? It's because you've had these conversations about, gosh, I really think I screwed that up, right? Mm-hmm. I really think I messed up here. What do we need to do? How can I support you? Let me back up. I know we can't take that away. I can't change what I said. And what can we do to move forward?
Mm-hmm. People management is real, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's, and by real, I mean just it's about that connection piece. Mm-hmm. And so there is the reality that there are supervisors or leaders that lead a team and they probably don't get to see their team that much. Mm-hmm. Or they don't get to collaborate with someone because they're in a different region, or that just looks different if you have remote workers. So mm-hmm. How do we use the strengths work to bridge that gap?
Mm-hmm. So I do think it is important because we are not so far spread out that we can't go to our regions. I do know that we have some remote workers in other states. I think it is really important for that team dynamic between their supervisor and themselves and their team and themselves to have some really dedicated connection time on Teams, right? Or on the whatever virtual platform, you know, you're using. And to try really hard as much as possible to make sure that the meetings are fair, right? Like, so if you do, we are sitting in my office now. I have some people usually on this big screen and in my office. That can be hard to manage. Mm-hmm. And I have to be really responsible with that. And sometimes I'm good at it and I can be very intentional. And other times I'm sure Jen and Steph and Megan would tell you, like, I'm not great at it. I do think that that's incumbent upon us as leaders to be intentional about how we're managing remotely. The other piece is when we're doing like remote one-on-ones or virtual supervisions and things like that, that we are all in, right? The one thing I will say is I have a huge frustration when it is clear, and I am guilty too, so I won't say that I don't ever do it, but when it is clear that people in the meeting are not in the meeting, right? Mm-hmm. If we were all in the same room, you wouldn't be checking your email. You wouldn't be doing whatever it is you're doing on your other screen. You wouldn't, because you would be here and we wouldn't have computers in front of us. And so I think sometimes it's about setting an expectation for ourselves that when I'm in a meeting, even if it's virtual, I'm only in that meeting. Yeah. And saying that to our teams and making it as much, feel as much as it can that you are in the same room, even though we know we're not. For me also, it's also about when I can see people face-to-face, I do want to see face-to-face. Like, we are working on having at least twice a year, having all of the operations supervisors come together face-to-face and see each other. At least having a time for all of my directors to come together face-to-face to see each other. I know that can't always be possible. I know there are always going to be people who are sick that day and have missed an opportunity. But as much as we can try to do that, I think we should, and make it special, right? Like, and feel like we are actually, yes, we're doing the work that we need to do. And there's time for connection. There's time for questions. There's time to hear how people are doing and how their kids' softball teams are doing. I'm in another group that meets virtually, and it's all, you know, leaders of organizations. And we've decided we're going to have just a check-in time at the beginning, like we would if we were walking into a face-to-face meeting. So yeah, I think it's really about being intentional and knowing that if you are the team member, if so, you're not getting something, you also have to let us know too, right? Like, I think there's that mutual part of any supervisor relationship of, if it's not working, how am I gonna know? Yes, I need to ask and I need to ask for feedback. If I have given you that opportunity, know that it's real. If you don't think it's real, assume it's real and tell me what I need to know, even if you think it's hard, because otherwise it's not going to get fixed for you and you're going to hate your job. And we don't want that to happen either.
Yeah, I do. I really liked what you mentioned about like making sure that we dedicate that intentional time to the first few minutes of a meeting, whether that's virtual or in person. And I do think that there's an opportunity for supervisors to get creative with this. Like, now you know your team's strengths. There is that opportunity to have 5 minutes dedicated to a strengths conversation. Maybe you pick a question and you try to understand the conversation, because I do think there is the risk, you know, when you do assessments like this, there's lots of excitement when it first starts out. People are like, this is my strength and this is not my strength, that there's lots of buzz around it. But we want this to be in for the long haul, right? We want these conversations to continue to happen and for StrengthsWork to be a tool for you to use on your team and to learn about yourself and about others. It's a very long-term commitment. And so it's important to kind of be a little bit creative too when it comes to how do you bring up strengths, even if it's 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Those opportunities can actually be the memorable and the fun ones that mm-hmm. you learn about maybe a fellow coworker or about your employee that mm-hmm. you maybe wouldn't have if you wouldn't have asked.
Right. I think that the other thing is if we don't have our strengths in front of us, right? Like I have mine posted on my door. You saw that I could pull my report out in a 2 minutes notice. Like I know where it's at. But I was thinking the other day, preparing for this conversation, I don't have my teams that close. But it is something that, especially now that Valleywide is getting more engaged in this process, that I want to be much more intentional about. And it's going to take a shift, right? Like it's going to take a different way of maybe setting up the agendas for my meetings or a different way of starting the conversations with the teams. And I think that piece is that next level of how do we make it stick? How do we continue to ensure that we are allowing folks to use their strengths to the fullest and we're having fun, yeah. right? Like no one wants to be at work and not have fun. And you have fun when you use your strengths, right? You have fun when you get to be you and it's really okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I do, just before we wrap up this episode, I want to say, do you have any final thoughts or things that you'd like to share, whether as someone that is a strengths enthusiast, as someone who leads, any final thoughts?
I just want to say I am really excited that Valleywide has taken this on as an organization. It's something that I personally believe in clearly, but also that I think can make a huge difference for every individual. Even if that difference is them only knowing more about their own strengths, I do think this is going to make a huge difference for our organization. And I just want to say thank you. I really have appreciated this conversation and really am grateful for you and you taking the lead on this in our organization because it has been, I think this is going to take it to where it needs to go, Sylvia. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And that completes this episode. And thank you so much for Christina to volunteer sharing her thoughts, her experiences with us. Please stay tuned. And if maybe be the next guest on this podcast, please reach out to me. So thank you so much.